You're listening to the station that serves your community, 1240 WGBB. And now it's time for Dave's Gone By with David Lefkowitz.
Good evening, everybody. Welcome to Dave's Gone By. Music, talk radio, comedy, and more. Broadcasting to you live from WGBB pre-Memorial Day. That's tomorrow, or so the government says. The official day is May 30th, but everybody's celebrating it tomorrow, so you get a three-day weekend. Now, I've gone on this rant before. I hate the idea of blithely moving holidays to Monday, no matter what the actual day they're on. I think it cheapens the occasion. And sometimes there's not even a logical sense to it. Memorial Day has been on May 30th in this country since 1868. But now it's just, the last Monday in May. All right, I understand the desire for a three-day weekend. But this year, May 30th happens to fall on a Friday. Excuse me, but Friday, Saturday, Sunday, how many days is that? Three days off in a row. So, what would it hurt to make that the holiday weekend instead of this one? Well, more and more, I'm grateful for New Year's Day because it's the only non-religious holiday they don't touch. No community leader says, you know, January 1st would be so much better if we celebrated it on January 5th. Or, hey, Stan, did you have a good New Year's Eve? Yeah, 2 weeks ago, we went to Barbados. We counted down on December 18th. But anyway, moving Memorial Day to Mondays from May 30th isn't such an outrage since the first two Memorial Days were on May 5th. And it's actually a New York story. Bet you didn't know that. What happened was, some drugstore owner in Waterloo, New York, got the idea to honor Civil War dead back in 1865. The next year, he convinced Army General and Town Clerk General John B. Murray to do up a big ceremony. People marching through three different cemeteries, laying wreaths, giving speeches, playing martial music, all of this on May 5th. In 1868, another general took an interest, General John A. Logan. On May 5th, he made a decree that May 30th would hence be known as Decoration Day. And just to prove that ordinary people had so much better command of the English language back then than we do, I'm going to read a little bit of his proclamation. The 30th day of May is designated for the purpose of strewing with flowers or otherwise decorating the graves of comrades who died in defense of their country. We are organized for the purpose of preserving and strengthening those kind and fraternal feelings which have bound together the soldiers, sailors, and marines united to suppress the late rebellion. The memory of our heroic dead, who made their breasts a barricade between our country and its foe. Their soldier lives were the reveille of freedom to a race in chains, and their death a tattoo of rebellious tyranny in arms. We should guard their graves with sacred vigilance. Let no vandalism, no ravages of time, testify to the coming generations that we have forgotten the cost of a free and undivided republic. Well, in 1882, Decoration Day became Memorial Day and was expanded to honor other conflicts, not just the Civil War. In 1971, Memorial Day was declared a federal holiday, although, go figure, the South still has its wounded pride, and a few southern states have their own Confederate Memorial Day. For example, Texas commemorates Confederate Heroes Day on Robert E. Lee's birthday, January 19th. One Memorial Day custom that I rather like takes place on the Friday before the holiday at Arlington National Cemetery. Apparently, soldiers of the 3rd U.S. Infantry, a special group called literally the Old Guard, walk along the headstones. At each one, the living soldier takes a flower and pushes it in the ground near the grave of a dead one. Now, on Memorial Day itself, it's traditional for the president to visit the tomb of the unknown soldier. There are actually four soldiers buried there, one from each World War, plus Vietnam and Korea. Korea? I thought that was just a police action. Well, go figure. Anyway, the president lays a wreath on the tombs, and members of the armed forces fire rifles in the air. That kind of sucks, actually. You figure someone who died in a war would have heard enough gunfire to last eternity. I mean, there you are, trying to get some everlasting shut-eye, commune with your relatives, flirt with the angels, and once a year they bring a bunch of soldiers around to fire bullets in unison over your dead body. I mean, sheesh. Imagine all those shell-shocked veterans of World War I Bang! What? What? The hum! They're attacking! They're ringing in my head! It's back! No, but kind of a depressing way to pay tribute to war dead, reminding them that we still need soldiers, we still need guns, we still need to be ever vigilant. They may have given their lives to end one war, but they didn't stop the next 50. Still, there's no proof that planting graveyard flowers is necessarily better. What if they're allergic? Does hay fever go away in the afterlife? Imagine all those asthma sufferers in Flanders Field. Oh, mon dieu, those damned poppies are back. Maybe some other soldier a few graves away is like, oh, Francois, come down. I'll show you something you can make out of poppies that will make you feel so much better. Nah, maybe we're just better off leaving banners and flags and plastic flowers. Or if you must be military, give them a salute and leave a rock painted red, white, and blue on the top of the headstone. The point is to honor their memory, whether the war they were fighting was a moral absolute, like World War II, or a mess like Vietnam. These are heroes acting courageously just by showing up, just by doing what their commanders told them without flipping out or going AWOL, by walking into the mouth of the enemy and being prepared to die, if not ready to do so. And I say all this fully remembering the ridiculous right-wing nonsense we've all been enduring during the current war, this feeble-minded idea that any questions about the war, any criticism of George Bush or Donald Rumsfeld, any second-guessing of military strategy, engaging in any of the normal discourse of a democratic society was somehow not supporting the troops. The Dixie Chicks couldn't make a disparaging comment about the president without DJs all over the country holding mass record burnings. I mean, you couldn't read items in the New York Post about anti-war protests, not just the editorials, not just every single letter to the editor, but the slanted news stories, every single one said, hey, now that the battle is going on, these people against the war have to shut up, because anything they say or do is supporting terrorism. Any peaceful gathering in a public place against the war is treason because it doesn't support the troops. Such hogwash, such garbage, and as I've said many times on this program, I'm for the war. I hate the Bush administration, but bombing the crap out of Iraq didn't lose me a minute's sleep, and the world is not going to miss Saddam Hussein, no matter who winds up in power over there. So I say this from the perspective of someone who was happy to see a little shock and awe light up the Arab skies. It's what we should have done to Iran during the hostage crisis. It's what we should do to Hamas if they don't stop the suicide bombings. And it bothered me that so many of the anti-Iraq war speakers and organizers seem to be hooked into a pro-Palestinian faction. How did that get in there? But I also understand how this government's motives for going into Iraq could be questionable, and how people could feel strongly that invading Baghdad was not quite so urgent as landing in Okinawa or Dresden. But still, even the people who bitterly opposed the war, who wished the United States would keep its nose out of the world's business, even these people support the freaking troops. They want the boys saved. They don't want any casualties. They're proud of the courage of these men and women, even as they're doing a job you might not agree with. And I think we lost about 150 Americans in the Iraq War, making it, to quote the comic book guy on The Simpsons, the best war ever. And if we eventually get out of there, leaving fewer than 200 of our boys dead, I think we have a lot to thank the generals and the planners and the soldiers for. But most of all, thank you, 150 dead. Thanks for taking out Saddam, or at least forcing him to move to a tunnel in the south of France. Thanks for showing the Arab world that America can either make your garden grow or defoliate you for good. And thanks most of all for giving the terrorists and their supporters a little payback for 9/11. Our soldiers did their damnedest not to harm civilians, which is more than you can say for the jokers on those Islamic playing cards. The care our military took and whom they went after certainly must have cost some lives on our side. American men sacrificed, just so we could go back to the UN and say, we won, fair and square. And even if we didn't destroy Al-Qaeda, even if we only made a small dent in future Arab terrorism, we made a dent. And the soldiers who paid the ultimate price in the sands of al-Basra joined those who gave their lives in Afghanistan, Anzio, and Antietam. We honor their memory. We hope they didn't die in vain.
These mist-covered mountains are home now for me. When home is the lowlands, and always will be. Someday you return. Your valleys and your farms, and you'll no longer burn to be frozen on. Through these fields of destruction, baptisms of fire, I've witnessed your suffering as the battle raged high, and
Dire Straits, Brothers in Arms, kind of a lugubrious way to start the News Gone By, but things will perk up, because the News Gone By is our weekly look at news and events of the past week from an American idyllic perspective. Politics tops the news, as always. White House spokesperson Ari Fleischer is resigning and going into the private sector. He told reporters that the people running President Bush's re-election campaign are planning for the next 4 years. They've asked staff members who aren't in it for the long haul to leave now, rather than during the heat of the race or in the next term. Personally, I'm going to miss little Ari and his press conferences. How else are we going to know what the president is sort of not saying about certain things he can't really talk about because he has no comment on them? And you thought he had an easy job. In health news, the U.S. has temporarily banned meat imports from Canada because of a single case of mad cow disease. Authorities in both countries are working quickly to learn more about the incident, since Canada is the number one foreign supplier of live cattle to this country. As soon as the news broke, McDonald's and Outback restaurants both vowed that they used only USDA prime American beef. No word from Burger King or Wendy's, although White Castle proudly displayed proof of purchase receipts from the retiree corral at Aqueduct. In entertainment news, well, it was only a matter of time. Like everything else that makes a mint, TV's American Idol is facing a $300 million lawsuit from someone who says he thought of the idea first. The difficult part for Fox Network is not coming up with a settlement, but how do you divide the money among the ghosts of Ed Sullivan, Arthur Godfrey, and Major Bowes? On the musical front, R&B legend James Brown has received a full pardon for all crimes committed in the state of South Carolina. Brown did 2.5 years in prison on a drug bust in the late 80s, and he was convicted in another drug offense 5 years ago. The singer vowed never again to have trouble with the law in South Carolina. Asked how he felt to be in the clear, Brown said, "I feel good, but I feel better in North Carolina where I keep my stash." Also in the arts, after 63 years of sponsoring live radio broadcasts from New York's Metropolitan Opera, Chevron Texaco is pulling the plug on its funding. A spokesperson from the oil company told Newsday, quote, "We believe it is important to focus more on the countries and markets where we do business." The spokesperson added, "And be sure to tune in next week when we start our brand new program, the Islamic Fundamentalist Goat Herd Hour." In legal news, It's frivolous lawsuit time. It's frivolous lawsuit time. People are liars. Lawyers are slime when it's frivolous lawsuit time. Yes, ladies and gentlemen, a new mini-segment on the news gone by, frivolous lawsuit time. Brought to you by Leviathan Media Group. Today's Awful Lawful comes from right here in New York. Madison Avenue, in fact, at the Vera Wang Bridal House, the exclusive, by-appointment-only bridal shop, is run by fashion doyenne Vera Wang, who has put gowns on the backs of everyone from Holly Hunter to Goldie Hawn. Anyway, Melissa Brennan was buying a gown at the bridal house when, heavens to Betsy, she stepped on a needle. Rather than just say, ouch, and put her shoes back on, she stewed about it for a few months and then filed a $2 million lawsuit in the state Supreme Court. She alleges that Wang was negligent for leaving, quote, pins and needles and other sewing supplies on the floor, rendering it unsafe for passage. Now, I do feel for this woman. One of the reasons I used to hate going into department stores and clothing stores when I was a kid, or even now, is that the pins and safety pins, you find them on the floor and on that little wooden bench where you put your stuff. You have to take off your shoes if you're changing pants, so when you put your feet back on the floor, you're just hoping you're not going to step on something. And usually the floor is carpeted, which makes it harder to see whether there are any shirt pins hiding amidst the indoor-outdoor pile. So yes, I've sometimes done the tiptoe dance while trying on a pair of slacks, or tried to put my feet back down in my sneakers without actually putting on the sneakers, which is a good way to ruin a pair of sneakers, actually, not to mention your ankles. And so, Melissa Brennan has a point. If you're out there listening and you own a dress shop or work in the clothing area of a department store, please try to keep the sharp little objects off the floor of the fitting room, or give people a pair of slippers or moccasins to slide into when they're stepping in and out of garments, so their feet don't have to touch the ground. Now, a lot of clothing manufacturers are doing their part. Instead of needles, they're using pieces of tape or little plastic U-turn hooky things to hold shirts and pants together. So if everyone makes an effort, we can avoid terrible tragedies like the one that happened to Melissa Brennan on that fateful day in November when she filleted her feet at the Vera Wang shop. And what can Melissa do to help? She could go away and die, stop wasting time and money on this kind of idiocy. You realize if this woman wins, half the clothing shops in America will shut their fitting rooms and say, take it home, try it on, bring it back if you don't like it. And you just know this lawsuit will tack on an extra $500 to every Vera Wang gown to pay for legal fees. Now, you think I'm kidding, but think how much it costs to go for a regular checkup at the doctor or dentist. And then think how much less it would cost if they weren't paying $10,000 a month for malpractice insurance. Now, I'll bet Melissa Brennan sues her doctor one day, probably for sticking her with a needle. I just hope the one he jabs her is filled with potassium chloride, because it's frivolous lawsuit time. It's frivolous lawsuit time. Ask for a million, you won't get a dime when it's frivolous lawsuit time. Brought to you by Leviathan Media Group for all your web building and remote broadcasting needs. And finally, closing the news gone by with sports. Big thumbs up and congratulations to Annika Sorenstam, professional golfer. And boy, that phrase is no exaggeration. Or should I say, girl, that phrase is no exaggeration. Sorenstam had a more than respectable 71 in the first round of the Colonial Country Club PGA tournament. That's PGA, not LPGA. She played with the big boys, the first woman to do so, since Babe Didrikson Zaharias half a century ago. Annika shot a 74 the second round, not good enough for her to make the weekend cut. But there were 11 guys who shot worse. She said she's proved her point and has no intention of continuing on the men's tour. She just hopes the attention will bring women's golf to another level. Still, maybe it will open the door for other female golfers to take their shot. And there are other sports where there's no logical reason why boys and girls can't play together, such as bowling, swimming, tennis, long jump, foot racing, distance running. Now, I have a problem with contact sports. Football, boxing, and sports that aren't contact sports but are played as violently as if they were. Hockey, soccer, and basketball. Baseball? I don't know. There's no sensible reason why women couldn't play Major League Ball, but the nostalgia factor is kind of hard to ignore, that boys of summer, young men in springtime kind of thing. Baseball is sacred. But golf, it's a nature walk with a purpose, a haven for middle-aged businessmen with large bank accounts and even larger prostates, a refuge for old-world styles, manners, and prejudices. So let's hear it for Annika Sorenstam and the next woman who tries to get the green jacket. After all, golf already has 18 holes. What's the big deal about one more? And that's the news gone by for May 25th, 2003. Please send your comments, opinions, and rancid Canadian beef to Dave's Gone By, P.O. Box 62, Hewlett, New York, 11557-0062, or email me at davesgoneby@aol.com. We reserve the right to read your letters and emails on the air, name withheld upon request. That's Dave's Gone By, no apostrophe, at AOL.com, or snail mail box 62, Hewlett, New York, 11557-0062. Please, no inflated golf scores. I'm allergic. If you're a good American, that means you like to own things. Well, now's your chance. You can own a piece of my show. That's right, Dave's Gone By is ready to promote you. If you have a product, event, or service to hawk shamelessly, you can buy 30 or 60 seconds of advertising time on my show. You can even be a sponsor. Just imagine. This week's News Gone By is brought to you by you. We'll be right back after this word from your product. Advertising on Dave's Gone By is cost-effective and reaches listeners not only on Long Island, but thanks to WGBB.com all over the world. To get a piece of the Dave, call 516-295-1511 or email davesgoneby@aol.com. To see our disgustingly low ad rates, check our website, hometown.aol.com/davesgoneby. Remember, you could be talking to you right now. Are you listening? Welcome back to Dave's Gone By and a segment that we have quite often on the show called Dave's Gone Cultural. Sometimes it's about music, sometimes books. Mostly it tends to be about the theater, and tonight is no different, basically because the Tony Awards are upcoming. They're on June 8th out of Radio City Music Hall. They will be broadcast on the air on WCBS-TV from 8 to 11, but, of course, I'm begging you to tape the first hour because I'm on from 8 to 9, of course, on Eastern Standard Time on GBB, but you can watch the rest of it live. Anyway, I'm here with someone to hash out some of the Tony nominations that were announced. My good friend, my colleague, he's been on the show before a couple of times, and I'm so happy to have him back, Jeff Goodman. Welcome, Jeff.
Thank you. I'm so glad to be back.
Yeah, oh, gosh, I talked to you about previous trips to Thailand Southeast Asia that you've done. You took another one recently. I want to interview you about that on a different program, but tonight it's theater, 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 because on June 8th, we've got the Tonys coming
up. Tony time.
Tony time. Are you excited?
A little bit. I think this year is rather predictable. And I'm kind of going to miss the first hour on PBS. So I think, basically, you could just tape the first hour and listen to Dave's Gone By.
It isn't on PBS anymore.
I know.
CBS has the whole... Oh, I see. They won't do
but
it.
But I like the PBS style, that whole documentary style that they did the first hour for several years now.
Okay. Well, as I said, first hour is still going to be unbelievably boring, so listen to my show instead.
Yeah, who wants to hear about technical awards?
Yeah, exactly, exactly. Anyway,
listen to them later.
Right. Let's begin, because we're going to run down just a few of the major categories and hash them out and see how we feel about them, because I think we've seen pretty much all of the contenders. So we'll start from the biggies. Best play. It's between Enchanted April, Sacred Night Gracie, Take Me Out, and Vincent in Brixton. Any choices there?
Yeah, was there another good play other than Take Me Out?
Well, I don't know. I might have traded Say Goodnight Gracie for Lifetime's 3, even though that show doesn't quite work. It was more interesting than Say Goodnight Gracie.
The first time, the second two times they did the same show, I thought it was awful.
Oh, no, I thought that was kind of the point. So you're okay with these contenders. Which would you choose, and which do you think they will choose?
I think Take Me Out is the only choice. Although I did like Enchanted April.
Enchanted April,
it's a charming little show, yeah.
Not so little, and it's by a relatively young playwright, a new guy who's writing... old-fashioned way, which is not a bad thing. It's with real characters you care about. It's funny. It's touching. Lovely play. But you're right. Take Me Out is exciting. It's fun. It's sometimes even thrilling, just in the writing of it and the playing of Dennis O'Hare, whom we won't even have time to talk about later. But
that's true. And if you like to see male nudity, God, you get it.
Now, you know what? I don't like to particularly see Manui. I'm just hoping Richard Greenberg writes a sequel about, you know, female tennis players.
The soccer team.
Even better. Or now female golf players, you know, this Hanneke Sorensen. But anyway, I think we're... And we think that Take Me Out will win?
Yes. I'm a yes, but High Like a Tune.
Okay. Best musical. Why don't you read them off?
Amore, Hairspray, Moving Out in a Year with Frog and Toad.
Okie dokie. Anything missing? They left out Dance of the Vampires. Okay. what do you think of the choices, and what's your choice and their choice?
Once again, there's no choice. This year's Tonys will be very predictable. I think yeah. there'll be lots of hairspray.
Lots of hairspray spritzing all around the place.
It'll stiffen up the competition.
Oh, don't even go there. Hairspray is so clearly... I think there's been a push for Moving Out on some level, but no. Hairspray is clearly... In fact, that set the tone for the season. It was the first big show to open, and it carried...
Well, that's why I think a lot of shows didn't open this season.
It's because Hairspray just looked like it was going
to... For fear of Hairspray.
Yeah. You've got Amour, which was actually a lovely little show that closed way earlier than it mm-hmm. should have. Moving Out has gotten this groundswell. I found it kind of boring. And Frog and Toad, for those who haven't seen it, it's actually a delightful children's musical.
At about 85 bucks a pop.
You know what? They're having a sale now. It's like $40 a pop. So, okay. At that price, it's worth it. Sweet. Mm-hmm. But Hairspray is the best musical.
But also, just to put a little plug in, Prince and the Pauper is coming back, which is another wonderful musical. Well, it's in the Broadway area. It's in the Lamb's Theater.
Okay. Cool. Shall we move on to Best Revival of a Musical?
Oh, finally, some competition.
Yeah, actually, Gypsy, La Boheme, Man of La Mancha, and Nine.
Well, actually, just between Gypsy and Nine.
Yeah, La Boheme may have a weird sort of outside shot. It's just weird calling La Boheme a Broadway musical revival. Rent, maybe, when that closes and they do it again. But who do you think will win?
I think Nine. I think people are, A, tired of Gypsy revivals. Even though they go back and see it, it's a big hit. Bernadette Peters is drawing in tons of people.
As well, she's
terrific.
But I
think a lot of people, because I even ask our colleagues, critics in the field, who didn't see the original Nine and are like amazed with Nine, because I love the show.
Yeah. I think you're right that Nine will win. I'm going to throw my vote to Gypsy, because, first of all, this revival is so much better than a Tying Daily revival.
Really?
I didn't like Tying Daly very much at all. She couldn't sing. And I don't remember it. I mean, everybody, Krista Moore I remember to some extent, but I don't really remember that whole show. This one really stuck with me. John Dossett make a wonderful Herbie, I thought.
I didn't like him. I thought he was very, very meek, which I'm sure, I know Herbie has to be meek.
Yeah.
But I thought he was just like too wimpy. And I also don't like playing Rose as this sexpot.
She's not a sexpot. She's someone who is still sexy and can use that along with everything else, which makes sense in a way of the context of the show, because this is a woman that men will still kind of cater to and listen to. If she were just a battle axe, just bashing the A, that makes her much more monstrous and not as interesting. And B, you know, you're more inclined to think, oh, okay, they'll let her in. She can work her way around. But anyway, we'll want to move on. But I think you're right about Nine. I'm not that crazy about the show. I don't think
love
it has a plot.
I think, oh,
it's a good score, though.
I think it's a wonderful show. It's all about the man and his women.
Yeah. Well, Man of La Mancha is too, in a way. That's kind of two wonderful cast members. I think the staging is kind of eh. Mm-hmm. And Boheme, I mean, if you took the New York City Opera staging and put it in a Broadway theater, it'd be just as exciting.
Right.
Yeah. Anyway.
And they had that one really great set.
Oh, yeah, that crowd scene in the second act is wonderful. Best revival of a play. Why don't you read them off?
A Day in the Death of Joe Egg, Dinner at 8, Frankie and Johnny and the Clair de Lune, and Long Day's Journey into Night.
Okay, is this one a horse race between Joe Egg and Journey or not?
I don't think so. I think Journey is by far the better revival. It's a brilliant staging. I really thought it was well-directed, and the acting is superlative.
Yeah. I mean, Long Day's Journey just totally blew me away. I have my problems with Vanessa Redgrave, which you'll hear about later, but the other three actors there are actually four in there, but the other three male actors are tremendous.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a beautiful revival. I think they kept every single line in the play. It's 4 hours and 15 minutes long, and so powerful in that last act. I didn't like Joe Egg.
That's because we all remember the Stockard Channing.
I didn't see the Stockard Channing. Never saw it.
Oh, my. That was such a great staging with Stockard Channing and Jim Dale.
This was boring.
This was unbelievably boring.
And Eddie Izzard just, like, talking to the first couple of rows and nobody else. Dinner at 8 was marvelous. First scene kind of rambled on a bit, but everything, that was a terrific Revival. That would be my second choice. And Frank and Johnny overrated, I thought.
Really?
Overrated.
Oh, see, I like Frankie and Johnny a lot.
Okay.
I think Frankie and Johnny would
I like
be
to go off Broadway
my
better.
Number two.
Okay. We could rephrase that. But okay, performance by a leading actor in a play. Brian Bedford, Tartuffe, Brian Dennehy, Long Day's Journey and Tonight, Eddie Izzard, Joe Egg, Paul Newman, Our Town, and Stanley Tucci, Frankie and Johnny.
I'm not sure why a lot of these people were nominated. Like, I think Paul
weak-ish.
Newman, they said, come to Broadway, we'll give you a Tony
exactly,
nomination.
Exactly, yeah. I mean, I heard he was very good. I didn't see Our Town, but I heard he was quite good.
It's
but
okay.
Okay. Not like Spalding Gray was so memorable in that last revival.
And Brian Bedford, again, okay.
Yeah, he was nothing special.
And Eddie Izzard, I thought, was poor.
Yes. I mean, he would have been so, if he had just been a little bigger, he might have been really pretty exciting. But he was playing it like television.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're not in the first three or four rows, forget it.
Yeah.
And Stanley Tucci.
I liked. I have to tell you,
good.
I like Frankie and Johnny a lot, but Brian Dennehy, oh my God.
No question. Dennehy's one of our great major living American actors.
You know what's funny? Everyone's calling that, and he never was until he started doing stage work of classics.
Well, Salesman.
Well, his Salesman was par none.
Yeah.
His Salesman.
Well, you know what? His James Tyrone is pretty damn close to. I didn't see Frederick
good.
March, but I saw Jack Lemmon on TV. I saw Jason Robards do James, not Jamie. And
right.
Didn't leave the impression on me that Dennehy does.
Yeah, I think he's amazing. And he's thinking. And now I was reading about him, and he's thinking about doing other classic shows,
Brian,
which is great.
Good. Please,
I think it's
please,
very good
Brian.
For the theater. I think he can bring a lot of classic theater back. And hopefully they'll get a lot of school tours to sit. I don't know if I'd take a school tour to this.
No.
Because 4.5 hours might be a little, and three acts, and it's long.
It is long. It does feel long at certain points, but it is a marvelous
But you know
revival.
What it is? After the third act, it just pays off when you leave, and you go, wow, you know, it was really
well,
long, but
the
it's
last,
worth it.
Those last two scenes, I mean, again, not with Redgrave, but the scene between the father and the sons and the two brothers are just astonishing.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, we've got to move on to leading actress in a play. Jane Atkinson for Enchanted April, Victoria Hamilton for Joe Egg, Claire Higgins for Vincent and Brixton, Redgrave, and Fiona Shaw for Medea.
Now, this I thought was a good character, a good category, because I did think that Jane Atkinson gives a brilliant, brilliant performance. I think I'm glad she's nominated. It's unfortunate that she's not going to win.
Because who's going to win, Vanessa?
Oh, I think a lot of people are going to go with Vanessa.
I think you're
I
right.
think she gives a very good performance. But I'll tell you, honestly, I think Fiona Shaw gave a better performance. I loved that Medea.
See, I hated that Medea, and I thought, even though she is a sensational actress, technically especially, I found her very indicative. I could see her planning out what hand movement and what leg movement would go with every single line. And I watched the actress doing that brilliantly, but not really conveying anything beyond that.
Oh.
And I also hated the production.
I love the production.
Yeah. A little word for Claire Higgins in a play that I found really boring, Vincent and Brixton, but she was marvelous.
She did bring life to this, you know.
Yeah. But they'll go with Vanessa, and I would go with Jane Atkinson, just
really?
A marvelous
oh, good,
actress.
Good. Well, I'm glad. I mean, hopefully she'll be brought back in more and more things.
Yeah.
Because I think she's just so brilliant.
Leading actor in a musical, Banderas for Nine, Firestein Hairspray, Malcolm Getz for Amour, John Celia, Moving Out, and Brian Stokes Mitchell, Man of La Mancha.
Let me rant a little bit about this Moving Out nomination.
A little bit, yeah.
John Celia was a dancer.
I know.
Did he act? Is he an actor, or is he a dancer?
Well, what about that musical guy, the guy who
I
imitates
know.
Billy Joel?
Kavanaugh.
And he gets
he gets featured.
Yeah, I mean, come on. Ridiculous.
I mean, he is the entire show. He's singing the entire show.
Well, no, it's not that he should be a lead actor. He's not an actor at all. He's doing Billy Joel karaoke.
But, oh, that's true.
Yeah. But anyway, who
and
would
his own
you...
piano player.
So you think Banderas?
No, Firestein.
You think he'll win, and you want him to win?
Oh, yeah. Although I like Banderas, I just think that if it goes to Banderas, it's going to be, oh, Antonio Banderas came to Broadway. I guess we should vote for him. Firestein does a much better job in a role you would never expect him to play. I mean,
oh, I would.
No, but that voice and a musical.
God. Yeah, I'll go with that.
And he's wonderful. And the man has not missed a performance. He's just such a great performer.
Well, I think one of the reasons he hasn't missed a performance is he shouldn't be in the leading actor category. I think it's a supporting role. He isn't on stage much.
You're right. It kind of is. It's a tough one because...
Yeah, which is why I think they may even give it to Banderas. Firestein may win. I think they'll give it to Banderas. I wouldn't mind because... Banderas really does make a good Broadway. He's not electrifying, but he's charming. He really can sing. He has this wonderful...
Wasn't that surprising?
Yeah. And it's this wonderful little boy quality, too, that's very funny and really sweet.
So. That's the well-written play, by the way.
Mm.
It's the book.
Okay. Leading actress in a musical. You read them all,
Melissa Errico for Amora, Mary Elizabeth Mastrantonio.
Mastrantonio.
That's it. I always mess up her name. Elizabeth Parkinson for Moving Out, a dancer.
Yeah.
Bernadette Peters for Gypsy, and Marissa Jarrett Winoker for Hairspray.
Now, it seems to sound like you have a favorite right there.
Oh, my God, she's so good. She's an overnight sensation after 10 years of trying.
So you think she will win and you want
Absolutely.
Her? Absolutely. You think she's going to beat Bernadette Peters? I don't think any Gypsy woman has lost, by the way, in the history of the Tonys. Any actress
you
who opened in Gypsy?
You've got to have a first time.
Okay. I didn't think she was that great. I thought Winoker was fine, or Winoker was fine.
Yeah.
I didn't think she was that great a dancer, which is kind of important.
I thought she was a great dancer. It doesn't make a difference. She makes you change attitude towards her, towards the play, towards everything. Think of someone else in that role if she wasn't that good. She is the heart and soul of that
show. I think they can, I think she was really good. I think her understudy's probably good, too. It didn't make that lasting impression on me.
Oh, I did. I thought...
Okay. I mean, she's fine. I mean, it's a good category. Melissa Errico was really charming in Amour. Mary Elizabeth Mastrantonio, she would be my top
surprising. So surprising.
She can sing. She was beautiful, but also tough.
Mm-hmm.
Wonderful. Elizabeth Parkinson, a dancer and Moving Out. Okay. How about a dance category instead of leading actress? And, however, I will go with Bernadette Peters and Gypsy because she was so far superior to Tyne Daly.
See, now, I didn't get it.
Wow.
I really didn't see her being so spectacular. And the fact that I just love Hairspray so much.
Okay.
So, and I think Winoka was wonderful.
Okay, let's skip down to Best Theatrical Event.
Okay.
Which are sort of, they made this a couple of years ago, so they didn't have to throw everything into like Best Player Musical category or like Special Award 2. So it could be The Play What I Wrote, the Jackie Mason stand-up show Prune Danish, Russell Simmons' Deaf Poetry Jam, and Bill Maher's Victory Begins at Home.
This is a tough one. Only because they didn't include things like... I mean, I was surprised that the Best Play category was...
The George Burns one. Which, meanwhile, here's a show, a play called The Play, What I Wrote, and they can't put it up for Best Play. I'm not saying it should be Best Play, but it is a good, pretty fun thing.
I don't know,
it doesn't belong in a special event.
No, I was surprised.
And it's going to win, too. I think that's what's going to take it.
There are three closed shows and one open show.
Well, aside from that.
Two of them were stand-up
comedy. Were stand-up comedy, and Bill Maher was good, but not that good. Prune Danish was kind of after Jackie. And Simmons' Deaf Poetry Jam was, at least there was something new...
But it was an event that a lot of people didn't see.
It ran a long time,
but there was no real press opening for it, and it was, I mean, a lot of the voters didn't get to see it.
Okay, now you wanted to just say one, before we close this thing, I can't believe how fast it's gone, but it always does. Just tell me about, we got the directing thing that you wanted to mention about Twyla Tharp.
Now, Twyla Tharp being nominated for director and choreography, I'm not sure, director certainly she's not. Okay, but a choreographer she is. But was she really a choreographer of a musical? I'm not so sure. See, I don't even think Moving Out should be counted. Contact, they told a story. I don't think her dance...
Well, Moving Out tells a story.
I don't think
it's a rather repetitious and boring story to my mind.
But the dance had nothing to do with the music or the... I didn't find it... I found it very disjointed.
Okay.
And I thought that she does her own style, and she didn't adapt her style to Broadway. She adapted Broadway to her style.
That's kind of interesting. But she will win for choreographer. I hope not.
I hope Jerry Mitchell wins.
Oh, for Hairspray. I wouldn't mind seeing that.
His choreography is brilliant. And I know you haven't seen Hairspray in a long time.
Right.
I went back and revisited, and he ties everything together with that choreography. Scenes move seamlessly.
Yeah, they do.
The sets in that and the choreography, the dancing moves one scene to the next. They do they do wonderful things in that show.
But I will say,
one
thing I'm happy about is that also the choreographer for Urban Cowboy got a nod, at least a nomination, because that was really...
To take
that
on
show
the road
got so trashed, and there were some really good things in it, and the choreography was right up there, as good as anything on Broadway this year.
Yeah, the choreo... This year. But this year is not speaking. It was not a great, great year.
Yeah, but dance musical on Broadway, how much better than that can you get? But anyway, Jeff, before we go, please, not only are you a critic and a member of the Drama Desk, but you do have a side business, and it's only fair to tell people what that is.
Oh, okay. We do party decorating.
Yeah.
So everything theatrical, and it's a company.
Including bar mitzvahs and weddings
and corporate theatrical events.
Yeah.
And it's a company called Fancy Schmancy Balloons. We're out here on Long Island, and you can reach us at area code 516-797-3229.
What's that number again?
Oh, for those of you who want to grab a pen and paper, it's 516-797-3229. Don't you deserve a fancy schmancy event?
A fancy schmancy event like June 8th, the Tony Awards. Thank you, Mr. Jeff Goodman, for talking over all these categories and things. Hope we conveyed a little bit of excitement about the theater season and maybe about the award season. And thanks for being on Dave's Gone Cultural. Performing Arts Insider, three words that represent a whole world of entertainment found on Broadway, off-Broadway, cabaret. Hundreds of productions to see and enjoy. But how can you keep them all straight? Performing Arts Insider, the guide to everything that's happening on the stages of New York. For 6 decades, Performing Arts Insider has been a bible of the industry. Each issue lists hundreds of shows, who wrote them, what they're about, who's in the cast, the designers, the producers, box office info, parental guides, reviews of what's good, what's bad, and why. Plus, listings for opera, dance, and awards, too. As the chief editor of Backstage put it, Performing Arts Insider puts all the facts at your fingertips. To subscribe or get a sample issue, call 516-295-1511 or go to www.totaltheater.com and click on Performing Arts Insider. Welcome back to Dave's Gone By. It's time for a segment called The World Weird Web, which, as you can probably guess, is devoted to odd and funny and interesting sites on the Internet. In the past, we've looked at everything from a Swedish Elvis impersonator to a spiritual springtime site to the homepage of legendary scat singer Shubby Taylor. Well, tonight's World Weird website comes from the pages of Newsday. Maybe you saw it this week. Digital manipulation is nothing new. Hell, I've been doing it since I was 12. No, but I mean photographic trickery using Photoshop and Quark and what have you. They've been doing that for years, from putting Nixon's head on a supermodel's body to more artistic creations. Well, something in between the two can be found at larrysface.com, www.larrysface.com. The site utilizes pictures, mainly one picture, of 48-year-old Larry Goldfarb, a balding, fairly average-looking man with somewhat buggy eyes. Larry's younger brother, Bruce, was sitting home during a blizzard, and came upon one picture of his brother that was particularly goggle-eyed and amusing. So he scanned it, made a couple of alterations, and emailed it to the oldest Goldfarb brother, David, who added a caption. This was forwarded to poor Larry, who told them, "What is it with you guys? Leave me alone!" Well, you know how brothers are. That was the beginning. The picture was posted on a website, along with other doctored versions of Larry's face, including some obvious ones like being on Mount Rushmore or Osama bin Larry or in Andy Warhol quadruplicate. And it was all a cute family in-joke. But then another website posted a link to where these pictures were, at which point Fark.com got wind of it. Fark apparently promotes goofy and funny websites like we do here. And suddenly, Bruce Goldfarb's website was getting 250,000 hits a week. So he grabbed the domain name, larrysface.com, and is sharing his Larry pictures with the world. More importantly, people began sending in their own digital manipulations of Larry's face, and some of them are sensational. You'll probably have your own favorites, but just some of the ones that had me laughing out loud include one where he's the Edge, walking behind Bono at the Golden Globes. His face is morphed with that of Cameron Diaz in the famous ad for There's Something About Mary. John Lennon never looked so acromegalic in his New York City muscle shirt, nor have Andrew Jackson's eyeballs ever looked so pronounced on a $20 bill. There's Crop Circle Larry, Statue of Liberty Larry, one fabulous doctored black and white photograph of an elementary school class from, must be the 1950s, with the school marm and every single child replaced with Larry's head. It's really a masterpiece. And yes, there is a sacred shroud of Larry. And he's a better sport about it now, probably because they're starting to sell t-shirts and mugs and frisbees and the like. Larry says his favorite pictures are of him as one of the Three Stooges and the pop art Warhol one that I mentioned before. Said Brother Bruce, I love families, Bruce said, I was encouraging people to make a goof out of Larry, and lo and behold, people did. I just wanted to annoy him, and he was annoyed. Well, what's extra cool about doing larrysface.com on the World Weird Web is that it allows me to play a related yet unrelated song. There's another Larry, also goofy, also with an older brother named David. His name, of course, is Larry Fisher. He's a singer, and talk about a striking parallel. In the CD of Larry Fisher's collected works, released by Rhino a couple of years ago, there's a small poster of his face morphed into the Mona Lisa. And there's one of those on Larry Goldfarb's site, too. It's almost spooky. And while Larry Fisher may not have the photographic je ne sais quoi of Larry Goldfarb, his special presence is equally undeniable. So for something hilarious, check out larryspace.com on the World Weird Web, and we're going to listen to Larry Wildman Fisher explaining just how special he is because his name is Larry.
My name is Larry, my name is Larry, I have a mother, her name is Mother. Hi, Mother, hi, I love you, Mother, I'll always love you, Mother. My name is Larry, my name is Larry, I have a sister, her name is Joyce. My name is Larry, I have a grandfather, his name is Grandpa. Hi, Grandpa! Remember Grandpa when I used to go over to the house and you wouldn't let me go into the kitchen with the rest of the family? Remember that, Grandpa? Oh, listen, Larry, you be a nice boy and stay away from us. When we want you to come over, I'll get a hold of your mother, and I'll call her up, and you can come over, okay? My name is Larry. My name is Larry. I have an uncle. His name is Bob. Hi, Bob. Bob, I like you, Bob, and you're an artist, and I like you a lot. Larry, I like you a lot, too. You're a nice boy. My name is Larry. My name is Larry, I have an auntie, her name is Becky. Hi, Becky!
Hi, Larry!
My name is Larry, my name is Larry, I have an auntie, her name is Annie Estelle. Hi, Annie Estelle! Hi, my name is Larry. My name is Larry, I have a brother, his name is David. Hi, David. David, you know I talked about you on my album on the Wildman Fisher story, and could you say a few words? I am a certified public accountant, and my brother Larry is the worst singer, one of the worst singers there ever was. And I cannot see how in the world, with knowing him, anything is possible, knowing him. Because I used to hear him sing all day long. My name is Larry, my name is Larry, I have a cousin, his name is Harvey. Hi, Harvey. My name is Larry, my name is Larry. 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 My
Are you a member of the Rotary Club, the Hadassah, the Elks? Big deal. Why not join something really cool for a change? The Bystanders Club, the official Dave's Gone By fan club. Bystanders get a weekly special email, a bi-monthly newsletter devoted to the show, an autographed membership card eligible for discounts on show merchandise and local businesses, and a one-hour best-of audio tape with gems from the show and maybe even stuff we couldn't put on the radio. It's still just $10 to join for the newsletter, the email, the best-of audio tape. For the cost of two porno magazines, and not even good ones, you can show your support for Dave's Gone By. Just make a $10 check or money order payable to Total Theater and send it to Total Theater, Box 62, that's 62, Hewlett, New York, 11557-0062. You can also join via PayPal, the email address davesgoneby@aol.com, davesgoneby@aol.com.
I need more entertainment, more talk, more music.
Isn't Dave's Gone By enough for you?
I need more. What else is on WGBB?
A bunch of shows, like Long Island's Dating.
What is that, advice for singles?
Exactly. Hosted by Bonnie D. Graham, Friday nights at 6.
Okay, what else you got?
Saturday night, Joe Salzone Live, conservative political talk from an open-minded perspective.
When's that?
7:30 Saturdays.
What about Sundays?
Oh, Sunday's a big night. 6:30 you have On the Edge with Iz Crespo about human rights and changing your community for the better. Then 7 o'clock it's Entertainment Long Island with Don Lewis.
Oh, I know that one. He makes a lot of jokes, plays live music with the band.
Yep, Sunday's at 7, right before my show at 8.
What about after Dave's Gone By?
10 to midnight, it's real-time radio, rap and hip-hop music in a mellow groove.
GBB sure has a lot of cool shows. Too bad you don't have my favorite.
Which is that?
People Who Rant About Jesus in Chinese.
We'll talk.
I remember you when I've forgotten all the rest. You to me were true. You to me were the best. When there is no more, you cut through the cord quicker than anyone I knew. When I'm all alone in the rain unknown, I remember you. I remember you. I had so much left to do. I had so little time to steal. There's some people that you don't forget, even though you only seen them one time or two. When the roads are safe, with the rain. Ah.
Song of Memory from Bob Dylan off the Empire Burlesque collection, I'll Remember You. Certainly the right sentiment for this night before Memorial Day, whether you're honoring war heroes or simply recalling departed friends and relatives. I know I'm still thinking about a high school friend who died 2 weeks ago. I talked about George on last week's show, and while the circumstances of his death were pitiful and apparently much of his life was psychologically unendurable, he also left a legacy of laughter and absurdity and sheer presence that has outlived him and given his friends and family lots of anecdotes to revel in and remember. I hope it's the same for you and the people you bring back to mind on Memorial Day. Speaking of remembering, don't forget to tune in next Sunday at 8 for another edition of Dave's Gone By. Like this one, it'll be a mix of the funny, the serious, the music, the talk, and the indescribable Dave-ness that only I can bring. Now, I want to thank some folks for their help tonight. Station Manager Joey, filling in the engineering duties this evening, while the great Engineer Paul whoops it up in Monticello. Joey, thanks so much. Engineer Joe for his help earlier in the week, and don't miss his show, Joe Salzone Live, Saturdays at 7:30. It's right-wing talk, but with, he seems to be inching more and more to the left these days, depending on how you catch him. So I think he got a year older, and he doesn't need to be Rush Limbaugh anymore. He can be his own person. So give him a listen, Saturdays at 7:30. And, my special guest, Jeff Goodman, always one of the liveliest interviews I have on the program. Now, he not only does the fancy schmancy balloon thing, but you can catch him on Manhattan Cable Television doing Two on the Isle with his co-host, Charlie Gross. And they do kind of what we just did here, talk about all the theater that's playing in the awards and banter back and forth and make jokes and make predictions. I don't really recall when that's on at the moment. It's every other week on Manhattan Cable TV. You can Google it just by going to the MCTV site. Manhattan Neighborhood Network, actually, is the place that produces it. Anyway, also a couple of things. I want to wish a get well to a few people. My mom's got a little cold, and both my friend Scotty and his little daughter Yelena have little colds. Too many seasonal colds out there. Please get over them. And last of all, thank you to my wife and life partner, Joyce, and to all of you for listening to and supporting the show. Now send your questions, your comments to davesgoneby@aol.com. Also, check our website for info about the Bystanders Club. And do it now because the price goes up June 1st. Okay, that's a warning. You have a week. hometown.aol.com/davesgoneby for more information about the Bystanders Club. And also you can find out about sponsoring the show and advertising, all sorts of stuff like that. If you forget the URL, just Google search Dave's Gone By and we're right up top. Now I'll be back on top next Sunday night, June 1st. Until then, don't miss your days going by. This is Dave Lefkowitz, Good Memories, and Gone By. Sweet things.